Importance of Fear is a horror fiction podcast which is intended for mature audiences. Discretion is advised. Welcome, Fearlings, to another weird and horrifying tale made just for you. I am your host, Mashulu, and I'll be your guide into the macabre and mysterious. Tonight's story recounts what really happened to Stalin after he died in the 1956 classic horror movie, Stalin's Brain. Before we get started, take a moment to like, subscribe, and ring that notification bell so you don't miss a single terrifying story. Deep below Moscow, two scientists stood in front of a brass cylinder filled with a greenish ichor. On its top, tubing and wires connected to a terminal a few feet away, powering the life within. At its bottom, a speaker and microphone to facilitate communication with its occupant. On the sides, acid nozzles to punish those who fail it. And in the center, a glass window framed by steel and bolts, revealing the cylinder's diabolical contents. Inside this monstrous contraption lives Stalin's brain, plotting the downfall of the American Empire. One of the two lab-coated men stepped forward, peering through the glass.
Sir, we have good news. A suitable vessel for your communist intellect has been found.
Dr. Petrov was the lead necromantic scientist for the Red Army.
Finally, after all these years floating in this wretched tube, I'll be human again. Where does this person live?
The second scientist approached. He had been tasked to give the bad news.
This is where it gets a bit tricky, sir. He's an American teenager, Dr. Ivanov said.
Stalin, even in this state, could have a person beaten to death. Dr. Ivanov had seen it done. It was unpleasant. He held his breath.
A capitalist? No, it can't be. I spent a lifetime hating those guys.
Stalin's green goo bubbled with indignation.
Well, sir, he won't be a capitalist after we replace his brain with yours. He'll be dead,
Dr. Petrov added quickly. Dead capitalists were always a good way to win Stalin over.
True, okay. When can we get this American to Moscow? I really want legs to dance with again.
That's the next issue, sir. The U.S. is winning the Cold War, largely due to the lack of your amazing leadership. Kidnapping an American teen isn't as easy as it was 10 years ago. We believe it would be better if we took you to the U.S., Dr. Ivanov stated nervously.
The sound of a servo activated as Stalin aimed his acid nozzle at the scientist. How dare this worm suggest that he sneak into America? He would ride into New York on a tank.
That had been offloaded from a boat, of course.
Dr. Petrov threw up his hands.
No, please, don't spray acid on another one of my assistants. I just got this one trained.
Fine.
Begrudgingly, Stalin lowered his acid nozzle. He really liked spraying people with acid. It brought him great joy. The screaming reminded him of happier times.
If it means having a body, I will suffer the indignity of sneaking into America. Where does this teenager live?
Anywhere USA, sir, Dr. Ivanov stated.
Fine. We leave Monday. Let him enjoy a final weekend of capitalism. For soon his skull will be the seat of its demise.
Susie, Chip, Buzz, and Ethel sat in Gus's diner waiting for their favorite song to play, You're Gonna Be Poor and Alone Someday by the Morbids. The place was hopping, packed with students from Taylor High. After school milkshakes, rock and roll, and gossiping were a daily tradition. Chip stared at Susie. Ethel stared at Buzz. Susie kept glancing between Chip and Ethel. Buzz looked off into the distance with ennui.
Buzz, Ethel blurted out.
Sorry, babe. What do you need? Buzz replied.
We've been going steady for 3 months. Would you let me wear your Letterman jacket next week?
It's the week before prom, after all, Ethel reminded him.
I mean, you haven't asked me to prom yet, but I would like to still wear the jacket if that's okay.
Wait, Buzz, haven't you asked your girl to prom?
It's all they live for senior year, Chip confidently stated.
I wouldn't go that far. We have bigger dreams than prom, Susie protested.
Are you alluding to marriage, Susie?
That's the only thing more important to a young woman than prom. I've been dreaming of prom since 7th grade. What dress I'd wear, the music they'd play, the food. It's going to be dreamy, Ethel gushed.
Her mind drifted to a fantasy of a perfect night. As if on cue, their favorite song, You're Gonna Be Poor and Alone Someday, started to play. Half the diner broke into dance, while the other half looked solemnly into their milkshakes, lamenting a loss never spoken. It was a big hit.
Finally, our song, Ethel squealed.
Buzz didn't respond. His milkshake held his attention as the raw rockabilly beat of the Morbids filled his soul with dread. He never understood how one band could just get him.
Buzz, what's going on with you? It's Friday afternoon. We have the big game next week, then prom. Your girl is into you. Why so glum, chum? Chip inquired. I talked with Sanders about Vietnam. They just gained independence from France. It's good the killing has stopped, but for how long? I'm concerned about the instability of the region and what it means for everyone's future. The U.S. and Russia are locked in a Cold War, each funneling cash into smaller nations in an attempt to shape its ideological narrative. I believe Vietnam could be a flashpoint soon between the U.S. and them. I think it's a bleak future awaiting us.
Right. You need to stop reading the paper.
Now, are you taking Ethel to the prom or what? Chip asked. Chip didn't get Buzz. Sure, he was a great athlete, but that brain of his thought too much. Always talking about political stuff that made Chip's head hurt. Buzz looked at Ethel sitting next to him.
Yeah, yes, of course. Babe, can you wear my Letterman jacket next week, as long as you promise to go to prom with me? Buzz forced a smile.
Ethel lit up. Finally, he asked, and it only took some gentle nudging, she thought.
Oh, Buzz, thank you. I'm the happiest girl in anywhere USA.
Ethel proceeded to side-hug him, planting a kiss on his cheek. Susie rolled her eyes. Chip sat back with undeserved pride. Buzz kept smiling to hide his fears of oncoming wars. Susie lived in the largest house in town. Her father was the mayor, her mother a housewife. Saturday night, Ethel was sleeping over. She often did. Ethel's parents both worked. Her dad was a lineman for the electric company, and her mom was a waitress at Lenny's. Ethel spent most nights alone dreaming of being swept away by Buzz and living happily ever after. The night was young. Susie's room had powder blue walls adorned with pictures of the Morbids. The two girls sat on Susie's bed, wrapped in robes, hair in curlers, nails freshly painted, gossiping.
How was your date with Chip last night? Ethel asked.
It was okay. He really wants to run the bases, but I told him no. I want my first time to be magical, not in the back of his truck, Susie answered.
The nerve! Buzz never tries to go past first base with me. He's a gentleman.
S-E-X is for married women. My dad always says that good girls wait for husbands. Easy girls get hurt, Ethel stated proudly. She knew the rules. Follow them and the world is your oyster. Though she did wonder why S-E-X was so bad.
I don't buy that for a second. Adults are always telling teens not to do what they do. It's my belief women should be free to have S-E-X with whomever they want, whenever they want.
S-E-X before marriage isn't a bad thing, Ethel. I just don't think Chip is the one. Though I do let him get to third base. Ethel wondered what was at third base. First was kissing. Second was a hand under the bra. But third? No clue.
I don't know. Life as an adult seems so complicated.
Susie, can I ask you something?
Of course.
What's third base?
Lean back, I'll show you, Susie said with a smile.
The team and the cheerleaders sat around a bonfire, drinking cold beers they had stolen from their parents. A car radio blared music several feet away. The lake shimmered with moonlight. The night was perfect. Ironically, Buzz was the only one not drinking. Chip made sure to drink Buzz's share.
My girl's great, I'm telling ya. Susie loves third base. I just wish she'd let me go all the way, Chip bragged.
Buzz sat on a rock near the shore, looking at the moon hanging in the star-packed sky. Without looking at his friend, he responded.
If she's so great, why did you make out with Tammy when we got here? Buzz asked.
Because what Susie doesn't know can't hurt her. Besides, Tammy says I don't have to wait to hit a home run. Susie keeps saying no. She's just a good girl. Great to marry, but no fun, Chip replied. He wasn't going to feel guilty about being a red-blooded American.
Susie isn't a good or bad girl. She's your girlfriend. What you're doing is wrong. Either be with Susie or be with Tammy.
Why pick when I can have both?
Tammy's fine with not telling people about us, so Susie will never know, Chip insisted.
Gossip will get back to Susie. It's the law of high school.
As long as she doesn't find out before prom, it doesn't matter.
What's with you lately? You've always been a bit of a buzzkill, but not this bad. Chip had inadvertently coined a phrase decades before its time. But that night, it would die on the vine. Buzz ignored the pun.
I've just been thinking about the future.
My dad died during the war. I was two. I never met him. I wish I had.
Oh, okay. The best thing to do when you're upset is to push it deep down inside you. That way, you don't have to deal with it. Plus, other people don't have to hear about it. Everyone wins, Chip said.
Buzz sighed. The week had been hard for Stalin's brain. Traveling across the ocean, disguised as an espresso machine, was humiliating. Then he was sent to the wrong anywhere. The baggage people in New York misread his tag. It took 3 days for his scientists to track him down. He later learned there was a city called Anywhere in every state. He asked them how they could be sure that this was the right city. How did they even find this teenager in the first place? Their answers were vague. He felt they were just hand-waving his questions away. He promised himself that if they failed him, he'd kill them all. After he was returned home, that is. He wasn't going to be trapped in America pretending to be a coffee maker. They set up operations in an old German spy center surrounded by a pine forest outside the town. They had learned about it after the fall of Berlin.
I do not understand this show. How could Brenda love Frank yesterday and then today forget who she is after a car crash on the way to Mary's wedding, but still show up at Mary's wedding?
He did not approve of American television, but found daytime dramas very compelling.
I don't know, sir. I thought she was going to tell Mark that he was the father of Trisha's child to get back at her for trying to sleep with Frank. But the car accident came out of nowhere, Dr. Petrov replied.
He sat next to Stalin's tube with a box of candies, eyes glued to the screen.
Enough. Turn it off. This is just another propaganda tool used by Americans to confuse our minds. How long till we have this capitalist teen in our custody?
Saturday night. It is prom, so the teenagers will be drunk and lustful, making them even more stupid. It's perfect, announced Dr. Ivanov.
That's 3 days from now, Stalin's brain boomed.
His goo started to bubble. Steam escaped his top vents. Stalin grew weary of all these delays. All he'd heard so far were excuses.
Sir, please, I know it's hard to wait, but prom was picked for a reason.
It's at night. The kids will be distracted, reassured Dr. Petrov.
Fine, but you know what will happen if you fail.
Hours later, Dr. Petrov paced outside the base, cigarette in hand. Sweat beaded on his forehead, even in the cool April air. His life was riding on this mission. Sure, Stalin was just a brain in a jar, but his cylinder gave him great powers. It was actually safer when he was just a normal human. Ivanov joined him on the porch. He's finally asleep. He seems to love Lucy as much as the Americans. He wouldn't go down till it was over. You look more stressed than I feel. Should we just tell him?
No. If we told him the truth, he'd kill us both. We have 3 days to find this perfect donor. At least we know they live in this town.
Dr. Petrov looked up at the sky. It was clear. The stars danced. He smiled for a moment. Dr. Ivanov looked up as well, but only saw Stalin's brain spraying them with acid. He felt ill. He often envied his friends who died in the war.
Right. A student at Taylor High is the perfect donor. We just have to find him.
I wish Dr. Alexeeva hadn't destroyed the files.
I get that she was depressed, but that's what vodka's for, Dr. Ivanov said. She was fine when she came back from America. Happy even.
We should have asked for the teen's name before telling Stalin.
Who knew she'd set fire to the building? Dr. Petrov questioned.
Dr. Ivanov put his hand on his friend's shoulder.
It's not on us. She should have pushed her emotions deep down inside, never speaking of them, and got on with her life. Instead, she let us down. She let Stalin down, and worst of all, she let communism down. For that, I cannot forgive her, Dr. Ivanov sneered.
You're right, comrade. Petrov smiled nervously. He knew better than to disagree with a pro-communist rant. That was a good way to end up in a gulag. The hallways of Taylor High buzzed with talk of the big game on Friday night and prom on Saturday. School pride posters about the upcoming events decorated the walls. It was an exciting time. Buzz, Chip, Ethel, and Susie arrived to English class. Chip was thinking about his prom date choices. He'd decided that Tammy would be a lot more fun to go with, even if Susie was better looking. Buzz told him he was an idiot, but what does Buzz know? He told Tammy he'd break up with Susie during the week. It was Wednesday, and he still hadn't done it. Today was the day, he thought. He'd tell her at Gus's after school. She'd cry, and with no date, she'd just stay home. In time, Susie would get over it. Susie and Ethel had been giving each other looks all week, whispering away from the boys and acting goofy. Ethel blushed a lot. Buzz, being melancholy, didn't notice, but Chip did. It annoyed him. What could Ethel be saying that was so interesting to Susie that she'd ignore him? Until he dumped her, she was his girl, after all. She should focus on him. The bell rang, and a man in a white lab coat walked in. He looked generically sinister. The teenagers sat up and faced forward. They knew that substitutes helped out when teachers were sick, so they deserved respect like all other adults. The man took to the podium and cleared his throat. Everyone felt his gaze wash over them.
Students, my name is Dr. Petrov. I'm an exchange teacher from West Germany. I will be with you the rest of the week. Mrs. Baker is teaching my class.
A hand went up. Dr. Petrov wasn't prepared for questions. He nodded at the girl.
I saw her this morning when Mom was driving me to school. How could she be in West Germany already? The teenage girl asked.
That must have been someone else. Otherwise, my class wouldn't have a teacher right now.
Another hand went up. This wasn't good. This time, the kid didn't wait.
Isn't West Germany in a different time zone? Your class wouldn't be in session right now.
You're right. That's right. I'm sorry. I meant to say that Mrs. Baker will be teaching my class tomorrow, which is tonight here, I think.
He could hear every second tick by on the clock over the blackboard. Susie's hand went up. She didn't wait for the nod.
Shouldn't you be teaching German, not English? Susie asked.
Buzz had a follow-up. And if you're from West Germany, why do you have a Russian name? None of this new adult's information held water. A murmur ensued. Dr. Petrov had to regain control.
Silence! You will find all your classes are being taught by exchange teachers. I hope you show them more respect than you show me. Now, I am going to take roll, and then you will be given a test. You will be quiet. Do I make myself clear?
Yes, Dr. Petrov.
Good.
He took a deep breath and started calling out names. He had forgotten how much he hated kids. Lunch finally arrived, but the normal cafeteria hullabaloo had been tempered by speculation. Ethel, Chip, Susie, and Buzz sat looking concerned at one another. Finally, Buzz spoke up.
Something's wrong. I don't think these teachers are from West Germany.
I don't either. During gym, they took blood samples before we had our dodgeball final.
Why would they need our blood? Ethel wondered.
They took a vial of my blood in science class. Then we had to do a balance test. They even measured our heads, Susie added.
It's weird. A teacher questioned me in the hall about prom and the big game. She wrote in a notebook. She even asked about S-E-X, but she didn't spell it out.
The table looked at Chip in horror.
That's terrible, Chip. I think Buzz is right. The exchange teachers are up to something. I say we watch what they're doing and compare notes after school.
They all nodded in agreement. The teens met at Gus's diner to compare notes. They counted 12 exchange teachers in total, but two, Dr. Petrov and Dr. Ivanov, seemed to be in charge. They also noticed other staff was missing. Principal Mackey was out sick, according to Patricia, the office lady. Vice Principal Shale had left after receiving a strange call. All the janitors were replaced with fill-ins. Patricia and the lunch ladies were the only American staff in the whole school, but they didn't seem worried. All the paperwork was in order.
I think the adults were drugged or something. It's almost like that new movie, Invasion of the Body Snatchers.
You're right, Susie. It's like the adults have been replaced. I think we need to go to the police, Ethel said.
The police will want more proof.
What about your dad, Susie? He's the mayor, Chip asked.
Yeah, I hate to say it, but he might be the perfect person to talk to, she admitted.
The teenagers arrived at Susie's to find a large white box truck in the circular driveway. The group entered the house to find Susie's mom talking with Dr. Petrov. Both were drinking champagne. They laughed loudly before noticing the teens standing there.
Oh, kids, it's good to see you. I think you all know Dr. Petrov, the exchange teacher. He's having dinner with us tonight.
You all should join us, Susie's mom offered.
It is the invasion of the body snatchers. Run, Ethel screamed.
All four teenagers ran right out the front door and sped off.
I'm sorry, Dr. Petrov. Promise soon, you understand?
Of course. Teenagers have active imaginations, the doctor replied.
They know, he thought.
The police station of Anywhere was an office with one jail cell that was always empty. Captain Rick often said that the town was just too good to need someone like him. That's why he stayed. So when four local teens came barging in with stories of Russian body snatchers, the captain became concerned.
Kids, I met the exchange teachers. They're West German, not Russian. Trust me, I know the difference. I fought in the Pacific, Captain Rick assured them.
Buzz almost said something but thought better of it.
Sir, they took our blood and now they're eating with the mayor.
It's clear that the West Germans with Russian accents have aligned with plant-based alien invaders. We're all in danger, Ethel blurted out.
I think you need to stop watching those horror movies, young lady. Trust me, the teachers are not evil, just foreign. We can't hold that against them. This is America, after all. I think you all need to go home, have some warm milk, and get to bed.
The group looked at each other deflated, then nodded to Captain Rick before walking out.
Well, nuts. The adults won't listen. What are we going to do? Buzz worried.
I know. We stake out Susie's place. When the doctor leaves, we follow him and see what he's really up to. It's up to us to save the town.
And prom, Ethel stated with a smile. Ethel wasn't usually the one with the plan. It felt good. I think that's a great idea. Chip and I will go in his truck. Ethel, you ride with Buzz. This ends tonight, Susie affirmed. They all agreed and split up to save the town and prom. Chip and Susie jumped into his truck. Buzz and Ethel followed behind. She had wanted a few moments alone with him.
We need to talk about Tammy, she said coldly. Chip's chest tightened.
How? Did Tammy say something? Do girls not know how to keep secrets?
Oh, geez, he thought. What are you talking about? There's nothing going on with Tammy and I.
Just ask Buzz, Chip stammered. Buzz would lie for you. He wouldn't like it, but he would.
Tammy, on the other hand, she wanted me to know all about the makeout session at the lake Saturday.
Oh no, girls do talk, Chip thought.
Look, I'm sorry. It didn't mean anything. I drank too much. It won't happen again, Chip said.
No, it won't. You've been hounding me for months for sex, but I've always said no. It's not that I'm some good girl like Ethel. It was you.
Chip, you never think past a certain depth. You only think about sports or going all the way. You're not as ready for it as you think.
I'm not ready either.
Tammy says you were going to break up with me. I'm guessing before prom, she inquired.
Yeah, but I wasn't sure I wanted to. I'm sorry, Susie. You're swell, and I should have told you. I'm a meathead sometimes.
I accept your apology. I think you should take Tammy to the prom, but don't go all the way with her.
You should be head over heels in love the first time, Susie said.
No, I'd still like to go with you. Let's finish out the year as a couple, even if we're just friends.
I'd like that, Chip.
Ethel stared at the box truck sitting outside Susie's house. None of this made sense to her. Why would exchange teachers drive around in a truck like that? Everything was wrong, and prom was only days away. She wanted to be home combing her hair.
What are you thinking about? Asked Buzz.
How weird all this is.
Buzz, we are 2 days from prom, and I need to know. Do you love me?
I don't know. I know I care for you deeply. I've never been in a relationship that's lasted this long, he admitted.
I just think that I love you, but I had to drop hints just to get you to ask me to prom.
I'm sorry, I should have asked you. You're a swell girlfriend, and I can't wait to go to prom.
Ethel grinned from ear to ear as she turned to him for a kiss.
Thank you, Buzz. Right then, Chip and Susie got into the back seat.
We figured we should take one car to follow him, Chip stated.
That makes sense. And as if on cue, Dr. Petrov is leaving Susie's place right now, Buzz replied. The engine rumbled to life. Buzz had seen spy movies and knew not to follow too close. This would be fun, he thought.
The full moon lit the night. The box truck ahead of them trundled down a curvy road banked on both sides by pine trees. Buzz had stayed far back and noted that the truck finally turned off the main road. He pulled over to the side.
Okay, gang, I'm betting there's a driveway up ahead.
We should leave the car here and walk up, said Buzz. Everyone nodded. Buzz took the lead with a flashlight in hand.
Susie had never liked nature. She was a city girl. She hung close to Chip, holding his hand.
Goosebumps raised up all over her body. Her coat was failing at its one job.
Chip couldn't help liking holding hands with Susie.
You don't know what you have until it's gone, he thought. It was his deepest thought ever.
Ethel went on hunting trips with her dad. She felt at home and took up the rear. They found the gravel access road. It wound up a hill to a large log building. All the lights through the windows burned brightly. The box truck sat up front. Two of the lab-coated exchange teachers stood on the porch talking. The teens couldn't make out what they were saying. Buzz turned off the flashlight.
I think we should go around back and try to get in through the basement, Ethel whispered.
That's a good idea, Susie replied. They snuck to the back of the building, finding a basement window and door. All four peered in.
What the heck is that? Chip asked.
In the center of the room sat a large cylinder with tubes attached to it, a sickle crossing a hammer painted on the side. 5 feet from it was a television playing a Western. Behind it, an operating table. Several large machines lined the walls, humming.
Well, we now know for a fact they're Russians. But what are they up to? Ethel asked.
We need a closer look, Buzz admitted. He checked the door. It wasn't locked. They crept in, not noticing the silent alarm wire attached to the door. They kept close to one another as they went deeper into the room.
What could be watching the TV from the cylinder, they all thought.
With a look, they all decided they needed to know. They came around to the glass window and there, floating in green bubbling liquid, was Stalin's brain. They screamed in terror as Stalin's laugh echoed through his speaker. Chip passed out. The others bolted for the exit. Two exchange teachers holding rifles intercepted them at the door.
Halt! Hands up, American swine!
They raised their hands. Through the other door across the room came Dr. Petrov and Dr. Ivanov, also armed. They went to Chip, who had begun to wake.
Amazing. Sir, this is the teenager, Chip Cantrell, athletic star and perfect donor for your brain. He's landed right in our laps, Dr. Petrov exclaimed.
Perfect. Quickly, chain his friends to the wall. I want them to see the operation for themselves.
Stalin's brain cackled. Chip tried to fight, but before he knew it, more exchange teachers appeared, overwhelming him. They strapped him to the operating table.
Leave Chip alone, you communist thugs! What has he ever done to you? Susie yelled.
Dr. Petrov turned to her and smiled.
Such arrogance. Such misunderstanding. Capitalism is what you have all done to us. You think you're so great, but your lives are built on the backs of the working class. True freedom is in Russia, where the workers own the means of production, Dr. Petrov said with a smile.
You won't get away with this. You really think you can invade our country and we won't retaliate, Buzz asked.
Stalin's brain's voice cracked like thunder in the room.
Hear me, American teenagers. I, Stalin, will be returned to the living through your friend Chip's body. Over the next several decades, the Russian state will expand. Europe will be mine, then the world. No more capitalism. You all will grovel at my feet.
Right then, the sound of a saw started. Chip screamed as he was pumped full of state-funded drugs. Within a moment, he passed out. A shadow of the circular blade slowly lowered, squealing as it cut into Chip's skull. Chip's brain was extracted and replaced by Stalin's. Susie wept, Ethel fumed, and Buzz lost a part of his sanity that he'd never recover. They tossed Chip's brain into the furnace, laughing maniacally.
Now that the surgery is complete, we must get back to Mother Russia. Pack the trucks and prepare this place for burning. It's too bad these reckless teens caused such a devastating fire just days before prom, announced Dr. Ivanov.
They placed young Stalin on a gurney and left. They could hear the exchange teachers packing above them. Soon the building would be on fire and they would be framed for it all, and no one would be the wiser.
What are we going to do? I don't want to die. Not like this, Ethel whined.
She really didn't want to miss prom, or let Stalin get back in power, of course.
I think we're cooked, gang. I didn't want to die like this either, babe, Buzz replied.
The smell of smoke made its way into the basement. Susie let out a scream and with great force pulled her hand out of the manacle. Skin ripped from her wrist, bones popped. Smoke started to cascade down the stairs.
We're not dead yet, you two. I'll let you out, Susie announced.
Grabbing the keys from the table, she quickly freed her friends. The ceiling creaked as the building started to buckle.
Quick, out the way we came, Buzz directed.
He pushed the girls in front of him right as the building fell in on itself. Both girls passed out. The next morning at the hospital,
wake up, sweetheart. You're okay now, Susie's mom said. It took Susie a moment to come to.
Buzz, she yelled.
Her mom put her hand on Susie's shoulder.
It's okay. Buzz is all right. He's in surgery right now.
You and Ethel passed out near the fire.
Did they catch the Russians? Asked Susie.
Yes, dear.
Captain Rick saw the fire and stopped the truck as it was entering anywhere. They arrested all the exchange teachers and took Chip to the hospital.
The captain felt terrible that he didn't believe you, her mom explained.
No, that wasn't Chip. Where is he now? Susie asked, fear overtaking her.
Of course it was, honey. His parents picked him up last night. He seemed a bit off, but the doctor said he should be fine. He just needed to take it easy for a few more days at home.
I bet he can't wait to see you again.
You have to love old films like that. Retro tech, Red Scare themes, classic.
What about you? What's your favorite old horror movie? Be sure to tell us in the comments. If you liked this Portents of Fear tale, consider joining our Patreon. There's a link in the description below. Want more horrific stories? Click on one of our other episodes on your screen now. Good night, Fearlings. Sleep well, if you can.